From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On this edition of Fresh Air, we continue our holiday series, Words and Music, featuring songwriters performing and talking about their own songs. We'll hear Loudon Wainwright sing about his middle-aged body and the ways in which he's let down his daughter. He'll also sing his song, I Wish I Was a Lesbian, and we'll hear him in conversation with our rock critic, Ken Tucker. Also, we remember Arthur Alexander. The Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and Otis Redding were Arthur Alexander's fans, and they recorded his songs on their early albums. As he was beginning a comeback in 1993, he died of a heart attack. We'll feature his Fresh Air concert and interview recorded a month before his death. Words and Music, coming up on today's Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. No one is going anywhere in much of Washington State and Oregon. Snow and freezing rain are hampering travelers, and power is out to tens of thousands of customers. 7 inches of snow are on the ground in Seattle. More has fallen in mountain passes, blocking travel on several major highways through the Cascades. Oregon's problem has been ice. Power lines are down. Much of Portland is without electricity. Elaine Donaldson is a spokeswoman for Portland General Electric.
There are about 60,000 Portland General Electric customers affected by the ice storm. We're hoping that these people, the majority of them, will get their power back today. But for some people, it's going to be through the weekend, they will not have power.
Utility officials say some people may not get power back before Monday. The Commerce Department reports that orders for durable goods have declined for the first time in 3 months. The news was worse than many analysts had expected. Russell Sheldon is an economist with Mellon Bank in Pittsburgh.
The durable goods report was quite surprising. The headline figure shows a sharp drop in durable goods orders, 1.6%. And the details are even weaker than the total suggests, because the drop in electronic goods and the sort of widespread softness in orders is much different than most people were expecting.
Durable goods are expensive products like microwaves, computers, and automobiles, and they are expected to last for more than 3 years. The Japanese government is calling on the group of seven industrial nations, which includes the United States, to help solve the hostage crisis in Lima, Peru. The standoff is 10 days old. Daryl Gibson reports from Tokyo.
Foreign Minister Yukihiko Ikeda said Japan has already contacted other members of the G7, the United States, Canada, Germany, Britain, France, and Italy, for assistance in freeing some 30 Japanese and about 70 others still confined to the Japanese embassy compound in Lima by leftist guerrillas. Saying it is clear the international community cannot condone terrorism, Ikeda added it is equally necessary for the international community to help resolve the crisis by setting free the hostages peacefully and at an early date. The foreign minister's comments today underline Japanese frustration with the hostage-taking, which, if it continues much longer, will force both Ikeda and Prime Minister Yutaro Hashimoto to postpone diplomatic trips early next year. For National Public Radio, this is Daryl Gibson in Tokyo.
New efforts to solve the dispute over Hebron are underway. Palestinian negotiators met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about security matters related to the eventual Israeli troop pullout from Hebron. Both sides want the agreement in writing in time for a signing ceremony on Monday. Troops would then be withdrawn by January 5th. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up nearly 9 points at 6,555 in light trading. This is NPR. Serbian anti-government protesters were blocked from demonstrating in Belgrade today. Hundreds of riot officers prevented them, while thousands of other officers moved into the center of the city. Serbian President Slobodan Milosevic is trying to stop protests against him that have occurred daily in Belgrade for more than a month. The opposition demands that government leaders reinstate local election results that most Milosevic-backed candidates lost. An international review team is supposed to release its report on the contested elections today. France said today it will no longer participate in the American-led air mission to protect the Kurds in northern Iraq. But French officials say French pilots will continue to patrol the no-fly zone in southern Iraq. David Culhane reports from Paris.
50 U.S., British, and French aircraft have been patrolling northern Iraq every day since the end of the Gulf War in 1991. The object, to make sure Saddam Hussein isn't attacking the Kurds who rebelled against him in that region. Now France says it will no longer take part, although the White House as late as yesterday appeared confident of French support. Now the French Foreign Ministry says that France has concluded that the original humanitarian purposes of the air patrols do not figure in plans for the future, and that France, therefore, will not participate. The United States and Britain will continue the reconnaissance missions. Diplomatic sources say the French decision is one more indication of France's policy differences with Washington. France thinks it's time to lift sanctions and start normalizing relations with Iraq. For National Public Radio, this is David Culhane in Paris.
The Federal Aviation Administration says it's awarded a $52 million contract for X-ray machines to detect explosives hidden in baggage in major airports. The first machine is expected to be in place by next month, another 53 of them during 1997. The FAA has declined for security reasons to say where the X-ray machines will be located. I'm Korva Coleman in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're celebrating the holiday week with a special series called Words and Music, featuring songwriters performing and discussing their own songs. Last January, Loudon Wainwright came to our studio to perform some of the songs from his album Grown Man. We thought it would be fun to have him interviewed by our rock critic, Ken Tucker, who has been following Wainwright throughout his career. Ken writes for Entertainment Weekly, where he's critic at large. Here's Ken Tucker with Loudon Wainwright.
In the opening moments of his new album, Grown Man, Loudon Wainwright III invites us to get into the shower with him. Then he turns on the water and howls out a tune about his upcoming birthday, celebrating what he calls his own sagging skin and loose teeth. Loudon Wainwright has been making records for about half of his 49 years now, and like all the rest of them, Grown Man is funny and fearless and moving on the subjects of romance, broken marriages, and the way parents and children try, and most often fail, to understand each other. Where other singer-songwriters tend to make themselves look good, or at least like sensitive souls who've learned from their mistakes, one great value of Loudon Wainwright's music is that he freely acknowledges what a screw-up he is, and therefore lets us acknowledge the screw-ups we can be ourselves. Combine that with a gift for catchy melodies and a better sense of rhyme and meter than most print poets have these days, and you've got one of the most entertaining and enlightening performers in contemporary music. We're very glad to be able to ask Loudon Wainwright to do a little growing up in front of us today on Fresh Air. Welcome, Loudon, and indeed, I'd like to ask you to do a little growing up. Could you sing the title song of your album?
Okay, Ken, here it comes. You got a grown man for a boyfriend, better treat him just like a baby. He's a saint on Sunday, he's a bum on Monday. The rest of the week he's just crazy, he's unpredictable, like an animal, proud as an eagle, big and strong like a bear. He's a snake and a frog, he's a pig and a dog. There's a menagerie that's living in there. You'll be his princess forever after, yes. If you keep acting like you're always 16, he is the king and ruling the kingdom's his thing. Just remember his mother is queen. Don't you forget it. Sometimes he fools around when he goes out of town. But sooner than later he's bound to get caught. Yeah, he loves coming home. But then he has to roll. Mr. Ambivalence, the guy that you got. Got some problems, no, you can't solve them. He's got some goblins he can't exorcise. Mostly he wants to cry, he's afraid to die. But he's living life like it's a booby prize. Don't you forget it, he wishes he were young, a little better hung. Paranoid, you feel that way too. to reassure him, you'll never cure him, but he still needs his daily dose of you. So don't forget it, you got a grown man for a boyfriend, so you better treat him just like a baby. Yeah, he's a saint on Sunday, he's a bum on Monday. Rest of the week he's asleep on Sunday, he's a beast on Monday. Rest of the week he's blue on Sunday and he's manic on Monday. Rest of the week he's just crazy.
That's Loudon Wainwright. I was joking with a friend this morning saying that I wasn't really going to ask you actual questions. I was going to just have you like sing song after song, and in between them I was going to say, right on, you're singing my life, Loudon, all right.
My job, and in your life, Ken.
Well, as with so many of your songs, there's something sort of creepy and admirable about that song at the same time, you know. I would think that a lot of women would, you know, appreciate the fact that you recognize that lots of men want to be treated like babies and want their women to act like teenagers. Is that a reaction you get? I mean, do people get it? Do you think your listeners understand what you're saying on those couple of levels?
I think they do. At least this is not a song I've had a lot of complaints about. Some of my other material has rubbed various groups the wrong way, or just rubbed them one way or another, but this is kind of a stand by your man, even though he's a complete idiot. And why would you want to do that type thing?
Uh-huh.
You know, what's the matter with you? Why would you want to be with this guy to begin with? But it is somewhat romantic.
Yeah, I think, yes, I certainly think so. I always wonder whether anyone in your family or among your ex-wives and people you've been involved with have ever been so hurt or insulted by a song that you've regretted writing it, or you've decided, oh, I'll take that out of the act.
Well, you know, my experience is that that people like to be written about. They're, I suppose, on an egotistical level, it's pleasing to them, you know, to be mentioned in song, even if they're criticized or spleen is vented in their direction, whatever. And in the case of my children, whom I've all written about, and even the ex-wives, I think they secretly just, they kind of like it. And the ex-wives, of course, can write back, so to speak, and have done.
You've certainly written on the new album, this song called Father-Daughter Dialogue is really particularly striking, I thought, in the sense of how it's been done. I mean, the first verse is sung by your daughter, Martha. You sing a response to what she says, and it's basically a song which, you know, basically castigates you as a father. And what I find interesting is the whole idea of you writing a song, you supplying her basically with the ammunition, and then having her write that. What was her reaction when you first, did you write the song and then show it to her?
Well, actually, it all happened in a short period of time. She was visiting me in New York, and we went to a restaurant and had an argument. This argument, being that, you know, I write these songs and drag my children into them, and yet in real life I'm never around, and when I am, I'm kind of uptight, and even though in the songs it makes me kind of look kind of nice and cozy, mm-hmm. in a certain kind of a way. And I was trying to defend myself, and she was really letting me have it. I think her argument is the strong argument, the strong half of the argument. But I decided when I got, you know, to write a song and try to kind of encapsulate the argument. And then I did play it for her, mm-hmm. the next day. And she seemed to think that I got more or less what was said in the argument.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to play Martha's side of this, and so we can hear that and then sort of get your reaction to that.
Okay.
I'd like to listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
daddy with your songs? Do you hope to right your wrongs? You can't undo what has been done to all your daughters and your son. The facts are in and we have found that basically you're not around. Dearest daddy, try as you might, all you are is just uptight. You sing of my mother and me somewhat sentimentally. You sing of a father and son when all you do from him is run. You'd like to think that things are okay by singing things that you should say. Dearest daddy, with your songs, do you hope to right your wrongs?
I mean, it must be one thing to write those words, but then to actually hear your daughter singing them. I mean, what was that like for you to go through the experience of recording that?
It was great. She's a good singer. I mean, I was...
Yeah, she has a really nice voice.
Very, you know, for and a mature... She's a mature singer. She knows how to sing. Now, those... Rufus, my son, and Martha, their mom is Kate McGarrigle, and they've been brought up singing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a great performance. It was exciting to do it. It was a dramatic afternoon. To actually put it down on tape,
yeah,
and it's not a duet, you know. We do not sing together. It is a kind of a dialogue, mm-hmm. musical dialogue.
I mean, the crucial line in that song and on this entire album, it seems to me, is when you say, "I expiate my guilt with songs."
Mm.
I mean, is that how you look at it? Is the guilt as much for what you've done in life as for what you're doing in writing about people in songs?
I try to. The songs are not therapeutic, so the expiation is not. I'm not solving much in my own personal psyche, I don't think. By dwelling on the thing, it can even be argued that by dwelling on all this stuff, that you might be making things worse. But I've always written about myself, and I'm very interested in what goes wrong in relationships. And recently, in the last couple of albums, I've really focused a lot on what goes wrong in the family situation. You know, I've a couple of broken marriages, and again, kids that I didn't really grow up with.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to me, and I don't know how much. Again, I don't know how much guilt I'm removing. Maybe it's exhibitionist or whatever it is, but I think it's interesting to other people too.
Mm-hmm.
And a writer has to find out something to write about that's going to interest other people. And people are terribly interested in these things, you know, relationships with their sister or their children or their parents or when a parent dies. Or this is the real stuff.
My guest is Loudon Wainwright. He has a new record called Grown Man. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Ken Tucker. This is Fresh Air. We're back with Loudon Wainwright. Certainly the most extraordinary autobiographical song on this new album is called A Year, which from my listening to it seems to actually be a song written to a child of yours whom you avoided seeing for the first year of its life. Is that right?
Yes. This is a girl who's now 2.5 years old who lives in New York. Alexandra, if she's listening. It was a difficult situation. I, it's hard for me to talk about it in real life. Maybe I should just sing the song. But you're right. I didn't, for the first year, I stayed away. And now I'm happy to report that I'm a little closer. I'm tiptoeing closer.
Well, that's good. Would you perform the song?
Yeah, let me just check my tuning. That's close enough for folk music.
The only time I've seen you was about a year ago. I was afraid to hold you, but I wanted you to know. I touched your tiny perfect hand before I went uptown. I didn't pick you up because I'd have to put you down. For reasons that don't make much sense and you won't understand, I've stayed away for your first year. It's sort of what I planned. But I've been in your neighborhood, sometimes just blocks away. I didn't come to visit you because I couldn't stay. There was a baby on a plane. Maybe she was two, and she was smiling at me. I was not sure what to do. Kept my distance from you. A year's much more than a while. And so I looked away from her, too ashamed to smile. When I saw you last year, I knew that there was no mistake. Amazing things can happen. Why? Just look what life can make. But life can get so hard sometimes. Some feelings can't be tamed. And people get so angry, frightened and ashamed. You've been a sort of secret for a year. I've told but few, although I'm sure that where you are, so many must love you. And I've passed by your window, but haven't dared look in. Although I know I'd love you too, I'm too scared to begin.
That's a really beautiful song.
Thanks.
We should make clear that not every song on Grown Man is harrowingly autobiographical. I think in your never-ending quest for a novelty hit that could possibly match Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road from about, what is it now? About
72, I think.
Yeah, I was over 20 years. This time you've come up with a song called I Wish I Was a Lesbian.
Yes.
Can you enlighten us upon the inspiration for that song?
Well, I was riding around in a car with a woman that I'm particularly close to several times a week. And I was noticing that she was looking out of the window and noticing other women. You know, how this one looks, and isn't her hair nice, and what a lovely outfit. I said, babe, what's the deal here? You're noticing all these other chicks. Maybe you're a lesbian. Well, she looked at me and she said, I wish I was a lesbian. Not that point, Ken.
I like the way you've worked me into the song.
Oh, at that point, Kenneth, I wanted to say, you mean you wish you were a lesbian because grammatically, but I let it slide. I didn't want to ruffle any feathers. But you know, Ken, that sentence, that retort, I wish I was a lesbian, it kind of stuck in the old Laudo's mind. It kind of lodged there. And 7 or 8 minutes, one or the other, this tune toppled out. It's going to be very big for me.
I wish I was a lesbian and not a hetero. I wouldn't have to mess with men and all their come and go, and all that awful facial hair and yucky machismo. Oh, I wish I was a lesbian and not a hetero. I wish I was a lesbian and that I wasn't straight. I would sleep with women only. Man, it would be great. I could throw away my diaphragm. I wouldn't want a mate. Oh, I wish I was a lesbian and that I wasn't straight. Hey, it's kind of catchy, huh? On National Public Radio, too. I wish I was a lesbian, I'd like to be a dyke. I would hang with Katie Lang, Mel Gibson, take a hike. I think it would be nice to love someone who was alike. Oh, if she was a lesbian, I'd like to be a dyke. Something or other. I wish I was a lesbian. I know it's sad but true, but maybe I might understand you guys and all you do. But if I was a lesbian, I wouldn't have to. I wish I was a lesbian. I know it's sad but true. Hey, I wish I was a lesbian and not a hetero. I wouldn't have to mess with men and all their come and go, and all that awful facial hair and yucky machismo. I hate that damn machismo. Oh, I wish I was a lesbian and not a hetero. Wish I was a lesbian and not a hetero. I wish I was a lesbian and not a hetero. Oh, it's going to be skunk time all over again, boy, when that hits the airwaves.
I think so. Lesbian mania.
Oh, yeah.
That's Loudon Wainwright III, right to him, not to Fresh Air.
I'm not giving out my address either.
It's Loudon Wainwright with Fresh Air rock critic Ken Tucker. They'll both be back in the second half of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations and by Borders, where the love of books and music sets the standard. Additional support comes from Ghosts of Mississippi, a Rob Reiner film, now at select theaters. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, more with songwriter and singer Loudon Wainwright, also the words and music of the late Arthur Alexander, whose songs have been recorded by the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, and Otis Redding. We'll feature Arthur Alexander's Fresh Air concert and interview, recorded 1 month before his death in 1993. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're featuring a holiday week series called Words and Music, with songwriters performing and talking about their own songs. Let's get back to Loudon Wainwright's performance, an interview with Fresh Air rock critic Ken Tucker, recorded last January.
The whole thing about you in the beginning of your career was that you were going to be one of those new Dylans. You got mm-hmm. that tagged. But it seems to me that the thing about Dylan was that what Dylan was important about was proving that you didn't have to have lines that rhymed and they could be real long, unruly lines and stuff like that, whereas your stuff is very precisely written.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that something that you do for comic effect? I mean, is it something that helps the funniness of the song to make it very kind of precise and perfect? And how difficult is that to do, to construct a song that's got those kind of intricate puns and things?
Well, you know, I think you develop a writing style over a period of time. I pay a lot of attention to detail, and I'm really interested in, as you say, you know, putting the right word together with whatever the other right word is.
Just as you're doing now.
How articulate, I mean, to say. You put the right word with the one that's also right. I can write songs, but I can't talk.
Uh-huh.
My father, who died in 1988, was a journalist, quite a famous journalist here in America. He wrote for Life magazine, and mm-hmm. he had a column called The View from Here. And I, more and more as time goes on, I think that, although I denied it for years that he had any real influence on me and on my work in particular, I can see now that he was a big influence. I'm more and more I'm beginning to realize just how big an influence he was. This summer I stayed in the apartment that he spent the last 20 years of his life in. It's in New York on the Upper West Side, and he lived there with a woman who he had a child with. I have a half-sister called Anna, who's 12. And Anna and her mom still live in this apartment. She's my common-law stepmom, you could say. And she's mentioned in a new song that I have about... I've dragged her into one of these songs, and boy, I don't know what she's going to think. Mm-hmm. Maybe this will be the first time she hears it. It's about realizing just how much... I was affected by my father. Am affected. Amps continue to be. And it's called Four Mirrors. And as I said, I was staying in the apartment by myself this summer for a couple of weeks. I've slumped in your chair, tossed and turned in your bed, lurked in your lair, I have lived in your head. And where others were closer, no one is nearer as I glimpse you and me in the hallway mirror. I've grabbed from the plate and I've stabbed with a knife. On day one, my first date, I slept with your wife. And my common-law stepmom, I desire and fear her. I compare you to me in the full-length mirror. Sharing hair for headlines, scowling, worrying, thinking, with a penchant for white wines, a disposal toward drinking. You had 'em, I got 'em. I move my face nearer, broken blood vessels in the bathroom mirror. And your doormen all know me. It's not so bizarre.
so it shouldn't throw me to go move your car. But the ghost of your father, he couldn't be clearer. He's there where he haunted you, the rearview mirror.
Boy, that's such a beautifully detailed, specific song. Thank you. That's really wonderful.
Thanks.
Yeah, I had always wondered about that, about your father. It seems certainly, I wondered, when you were growing up, did you read his columns? Did you read what he did? Or was it one of those things where, it's dad, it's like, you know, he's a bricklayer, I don't go look at the bricks, I don't read the stuff.
No, I read the columns, I mean, and I didn't read all of them, but he was really a good writer, and the good columns are great. I mean, mm-hmm. They really hold up amazingly. The one about when the dog got run over and the house burned down. The personal stuff were the great columns.
Mm-hmm.
But he had that journalistic sense of beginning, middle, and an end, and clarity, and you know, making it understandable, I guess.
Yet I would also think that even when he was writing about personal stuff, given the times and writing for Life magazine, that there was also a kind of formal reserve. He couldn't get as autobiographical as you would in writing.
Yeah, I think that very well could be a generational thing, or a difference between the two of us, or mm-hmm. both. And you know, 3 pages into Life magazine is not really the forum to talk about your broken marriage and the time that you hauled off and whacked your kid in the back of the Pontiac.
Right.
When it, you know. Somehow music and performing these songs that I write are written to be performed, and I think by performing them you can get away with stuff that you couldn't get away with in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Did he appreciate that quality in your work?
I think he appreciated it to a certain degree, and I think it also turned him off. Mm-hmm. I know that he felt that sometimes I was being exhibitionistic, is that the word? Mm. Or you know, just gratuitous. It was gratuitous confessionalism or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the way that I write. I can't, if I write a song and it strikes me as being good, I just assume that I'm going to go with it.
Loudon Wainwright recorded last January after the release of his CD, Grown Man. He spoke with Fresh Air rock critic Ken Tucker, who was also critic-at-large for Entertainment Weekly. Ken will be with us New Year's Eve to run down his 1996 Top 10 list. Our Words and Music series continues with a songwriter who was a favorite of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. After a break, this is Fresh Air. We continue our Words and Music series with an excerpt of a concert that has special meaning for us. In 1993, we presented singer and songwriter Arthur Alexander in concert at the annual Public Radio Conference. Alexander's early records inspired the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. As Keith Richards said, when the Beatles and the Stones got their first chance to record, the Beatles did Alexander's song Anna, and the Stones did his song You Better Move On. That should tell you enough. Alexander had rhythm and blues hits in the 60s and 70s, then he gave up music, moved from his Alabama home to Cleveland, and drove a bus for a community center. When he joined us, he was beginning a comeback. He had just released his first album in 20 years, but he still couldn't afford to give up driving the bus. 1 month after the concert, as he began a new chapter in his life, he had a heart attack and died at the age of 53. In his Fresh Air concert, Arthur Alexander was accompanied by a band led by Ben Vaughan, who produced the comeback record.
Okay, this is a song that I did years ago and also had the pleasure of doing on my new Elektra album, a little thing that goes a little something like this. It's entitled Go Home Girl. Well, now me and Frank, we're the best of friends, and our friendship will never end. But it would hurt him so for him to know that I love his girlfriend. Now the love of a girl and the love of a friend are two things you can't compare. So my heart will ache, but I will let it break, 'cause I know it just ain't fair. Go on home, girl, let's call it a night. Go on home, girl, this just ain't right. But before you go, I want you to know that I love you, yes I do. Though it may break my heart, but darling, we must part, 'cause I know Frank loves you too. A love that's really real, but I think that he is just like me, and I don't know just how he'd feel. But darling, I do know it would hurt him so if you told him that it must end. And I could never hold a love I stole from a man I call my best friend. Go on home, girl, let's call it a night. Go on home, girl, this just ain't right. Go on home, baby, please. You know I love you, but he does too. And you belong to him, yes you do. Go on home, baby, please. You better go right now, honey, please. Thank you very much. Thank you.
It's really so great to have Arthur Alexander performing again, and I really want to know what it's been like for you, what it's like for you to perform now, to perform again.
It feels great. It feels great. You know, it brings back old memories. You know, I always did love performing, by the way. You know, I didn't leave because... I didn't like performing. I left because of other reasons, you know.
What kind of reasons?
Well, record people, publishers, you know. When you make a hit record, you kind of like to get paid, you know.
Well, you actually had a lot of your copyrights that you sold to or gave to other people, so you didn't even make a lot of money from some of your songs that other people did?
Well, I signed publishing over to publishers. But in turn, they were supposed to pay me, you know. You see, I didn't have a publishing company right. when I got into the business, you know. So other people published the songs, and they were supposed to pay me, you know. The way it's supposed to go is the writer gets half from the publisher.
Right.
That half I never saw.
So my impression is that you had to be kind of coaxed to come back and perform. That you, it's not like you were really looking to do it. So did they have to really talk you into it? I know first you were asked to do an Alabama Music Hall of Fame thing, and then you were asked to do a record. Did they have to talk you into it?
Yeah, they did pretty much, because I had resigned myself to doing what I was doing, and I was happy doing that, you know. And they opened this Hall of Fame thing in Alabama, and Rick Hall called me and said that they had reserved a spot down there, and they had a star in it for me, and would I come down and sing a few numbers. And after a while, I agreed to do that, and after I'd done that, they called me back the next year for the Helen Keller Festival and asked me if I would come down and sing a few numbers for that. And I agreed to that, and I met Donnie Fritz there, and he was telling me about a thing in New York at the Bottom Line called A Bunch of Songwriters Sitting Around Singing. And would I come and do that? And I was a little reluctant about that, because I thought New York was a stretch, you know? And he said he had did it, you know, and he asked if it was okay if he gave Alan Pepper, the owner, my number. And I said, okay.
And that's how it all started. Yeah. So I want you to do another song. Time goes so quickly when you're live. But I just want to, we have a great band, and I want to introduce them before we do the next song. We have Ben Vaughn on guitar, Bobby J. lead guitar, Seth Baer on drums, and Mike Vogelman on bass. And you want to do another song?
Sure.
Yeah, great band, great band.
This is from my Elektra album, Genie in the Jar. Little genie in the jar, I got bitten by your bug. You drove away my true love, and she ain't never coming back to me. And she ain't never coming back to me. But she left you on the table to comfort me and keep me stable. You try to help, but you ain't able. Cause she ain't never coming back to me. Or she ain't never coming back to me. Little genie in the jug, I got bitten by your bug. You drove away my true love, and she ain't never coming back to me. She ain't never coming back to me. All right. Little genie in the jug, we might as well just board a bus. Cause she ain't never coming back to us. Or she ain't never coming back to us. She ain't never coming back to me. Or she ain't never coming back to me. She ain't never coming back to me. Or she ain't never coming back to me.
We're featuring a 1993 concert with Arthur Alexander as part of our Words and Music series. We'll hear more of the concert after a break. This is Fresh Air. To our concert with Arthur Alexander, recorded in May 1993, 1 month before his death. Arthur, the next song you're going to do is one a lot of our listeners will know. You better move on. The Rolling Stones recorded it early in their career. Do you know how the Rolling Stones and Beatles got to know your songs and record them?
Well, the story I got, you know, there's a radio station called Radio Luxembourg. And that station was piped into London, you know, I think. And they all listened to that station. And on that station, they played like a lot of R&B. And my tune was among them. And I think that's how they heard me.
Want to do it for us?
Sure. You asked me to give up the hand of the girl I love. You tell me I'm not the man she's worthy of. But who are you to tell her who to love? That's up to her. Yes, and the Lord above. You better move on. Well, I know you can buy her fancy clothes and diamond rings, but I believe she's happy with me without those things. Still, you beg me to set her free, but my friend, that will never be. You better move on. Can't blame you for loving her, but can't you understand, man, she's my girl, and I'm never gonna let her go, oh no, 'cause I think you better go. Now I'm getting mighty mad. You asked me to give up the only love I've ever had. Maybe I would, oh, but I love her so. I'm never gonna let her go. Better move on. Better move on. Better move on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Arthur, you have such a really southern-based sound. I know you're from Alabama. You sang in the church when you were young?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I started in the church. You know, my father, he was a old blues player, you know. But when I came along, I got to be about 5 or 6, you know, he stopped because, like me, he never made no money, you know. And he didn't want me to take that path, you know. So I shot him a curve. You know, I started singing with a group called the Hard Strings in the church. And he loved that, you know, because he found religion later in life. Matter of fact, I saw him get baptized, you know, and he was an avid churchgoer after that. And he thought I was on the right path.
What kind of music were you doing in the church?
Religious music, you know.
Well, I mean, was it tight harmonies or what?
I'm working on the building and, you know, songs like that, you know. Old Negro religious spirituals, you know. Things with a lot of heart to them, you know.
I want to get in another song before we run out of time. And this is a song that I think a lot of our listeners will recognize. It's Every Day I Had to Cry. Now, you had a hit of this in the 70s, and then Steve Alamo recorded it in the 60s and had a hit with
that.
Yeah,
he did, yeah.
Yeah, so, and this is, of course, on your new album, too.
Yes.
And you want to do it?
Sure, yeah. Sure. There was a little girl I had planned to marry. This was my love, I didn't want to share it. I thought that love would make my life bright and sunny. She said she couldn't love me cause I didn't have no money. So every day I have to cry some. Every day I have to cry some. Dry the water from my eyes some. Every day I have to cry. I had me a girl, and yes, I really loved her every night. Well, I was thinking of her, but you can't mix love with money. Cause if you do, you're gonna hurt somebody. And every day I have to cry some. Every day I have to cry some. Dry the water from my eyes some. Every day I have to cry. Lord, I know that I'm just a poor man, but is it wrong to love cause I'm not a rich man? But you can't mix love with money, cause when you do, you're gonna hurt somebody. And every day I have to cry some. Every day I have to cry some. Dry the water from my eyes some. Every day I have to cry. Every day I have to ooh, cry some. Every day I have to cry some. Dry the water from my eyes some. Every day I have to cry. Every day I have to let the water fall from my eyes. Every day I have to let the water fall from my eyes. Every day I have to ooh, cry some. Every day I have to cry some. Dry the water from my eyes some. Every day I have to cry.
Thank you. Thank you.
Arthur Alexander recorded in May 1993 at the annual Public Radio Conference. Alexander died 1 month after the concert of a heart attack at the age of 53. His comeback album, recorded shortly before his death, is called Lonely Just Like Me. Our Words and Music series continues Monday. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from The People vs. Larry Flint, a Milos Forman film, now at select theaters. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, we continue our Words and Music series with songwriter, guitarist, and singer Richard Thompson. He first became known in the late 60s as a member of the folk rock band Fairport Convention. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.